Today is Thursday. It's March 7th, 2019. It's 11:13 in the morning. This is John Williams. You're listening to The Mincing Rascals. Thank you for that. This is a weekly podcast that we record in the studios of WGN Radio, downtown Chicago. I'm on WGN Radio weekdays from 1 to 3.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of the WinTrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, creator of the comic strip Prickly City, and co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
And I'm Eric Zorn, the angsty columnist from the Tribune.
What you angsty about, Eric Zorn?
I thought that would be a good mood to have.
Kind of feels, a good reflection
feels,
of the mood?
It feels young. It feels alienated, a little emo, maybe. I don't know.
Are you so powerful that you can choose your moods? That's impressive.
Yeah, no kidding.
Wow. I have great self-control. Holy cow.
We're going to start in Trump land today. He may be angsty. There's a lot of Chicago and Illinois news to talk about, too, but the president has had a busy week, or his detractors have. Over 80 Trump associates and organizations have received letters of inquiry from House investigating committees. I have a question for you guys. Let's start there. Why are you laughing at that?
Was it Scott? Someone groaned over there.
No.
Oh, thought I heard someone groan.
Well, that was America. But I mean, do you think that the oversight committees are overreaching? I had a conversation the other day. I believe we talked about this last week with one of the oversight committee members, Robin Kelly, the congresswoman from the southeast side of Chicago. And she said, our job is to see how the president's doing. That's the definition of oversight.
Right.
But it looks very much to me like they're fishing.
You know the phrase, fish in a barrel?
Yeah.
Right. Well, they're shooting it. The barrel's filled with fish. What are you going to do?
They're asking for documents from or appearances by Donald Jr., Eric, Jared, Michael Flynn, Reince Priebus, Hope Hicks, Manafort, Roger Stone, the whole cast. Are they going too far, Eric, or is all of this warranted?
Aren't we going to find out if they're going too far once these people testify and once we find out the scope of the criminal enterprise that they've all been engaged in?
Frankly, I think the answer to your question, John, is the fact that these aren't subpoenas. These are letters saying, hey, you know what, John, I was just thinking, can I see your tax returns? Because I'm curious.
No.
No.
And that's what
they
said.
And then it'll be a subpoena.
Yeah, I mean, in this case, he may not have a choice.
No, I mean, I think the question of whether this is overreach is going to be answered and only in retrospect. Right? I mean, if these guys come in and all of a sudden you realize what kinds of scams they've been running.
But if the Democrats, I think it's more a political question, and if the Democrats look like they're made to be just desperately looking for everything, that could end up hurting them.
Go ahead, Steve.
And one of the versions of this conversation I heard recently, I was told, I don't remember if it was from both branches of, or both houses of Congress, but over a thousand subpoenas were issued in the Whitewater investigation. So 80 letters probably isn't that big of a deal.
I've come down on the side of I'm opposed to impeachment at this point. I feel like we're at a point in the political cycle where impeachment would really just muddy the waters, that they need to just pursue these investigations, ask these questions, get these documents, and then let the voters decide whether they want to reelect Donald Trump. But if they work to impeach him and they throw the country into that sort of a paroxysm of fuss and feathers, that politically it's just a dumb move. If this were the first year of Trump's administration, or we had three more years to go.
Well, that's problematic. I think literally as a matter of timing, an impeachment would coincide with the election anyway, or be close enough that if you impeach him, he's out of office. Well, you're going to have that opportunity pretty close to when an impeachment would come down anyway, right?
These are in effect impeachment hearings that they're having right now, right? I mean, they're plumbing all this information,
right?
They're going to come up with some conclusions, but as long as they don't make that move into impeachment, which would be futile anyway, because unless you come up with something really, really bad, the Republicans are not going to go along with it.
Well, if you listen to the language the Democrats of the House are using, it's exactly that. We're looking at things. We're not anywhere close to impeachment, but we just want to, you know, do due diligence. We're going forward with this, and so yeah, it's clearly setting the bed for an impeachment hearing.
Well, if every one of those fish in the barrel were legit, I still think that they don't need all of the fish. This is an ongoing argument Steve and I have been having, that it is political. And if you want to nit and pick at every single thing, including whether or not Donald Trump hit his high school records, which got traction this week, I think you're doing a disservice.
I did groan that time.
I do think that's a disservice on every front, politically and otherwise.
Okay. See, this is what you do to me. You get me to argue things that I don't believe in that strongly, or you little things, but that's not exactly
when they argue. Are they wily that way,
honey? That's not exactly the point. Now, you know what I told you in the car on the way over here. The point isn't that Donald Trump was trying to hide his high school records. The point is, at the moment, he was doing that. He was calling for
Obama to prove that he was a good student.
You know, to release his high school records and belittling him for not doing it. That's why it's significant.
And, you know,
I don't want to see any of their high school scores, but to be calling for one guy's and belittling him for not doing it while you're at the same time hiding yours,
okay,
that
but,
just
and,
that claim, tells
and
you
claiming
something.
that you're a brilliant student and a genius.
A lot of people say he was finished first in his class.
They have no record of him being on any honorary academic record in 1968.
Isn't it just completely baked into the cake now that Trump is a hypocrite and a liar? And
well,
that doesn't
that's
point.
The problem. That's
this
the
doesn't
that's
matter
the
anymore.
You could... Thank you for that. And in the meantime, coinciding with this is the fact that we have an $890 billion trade imbalance. So maybe that should be more the focus. I'm pretty ticked all the time at CNN now, just as a for instance. And I think the Democrats look way too opportunistic. My end game is Donald Trump's policies or presidency are weaker or end as soon as possible.
And
this does not help.
You made the point that this is political on part of Democrats. And I would say, yes, there's definitely a significant political element to this. But it was also political that for 2 years, the House Republicans did nothing in the way of oversight. So, you know, it's kind of balancing out now. That the Republicans have been doing some of the due diligence they should have in the House, then maybe the Democrats wouldn't have to be so wild and crazy in sending out all these requests for documents.
I mean, I think our conversation here is proving the fact that the president has lied every day, has lied over 1,000 times documented, and now we've got lying fatigue, so he's gotten away with it.
He, without any reference to anything else today, tweeted, "It was not a campaign contribution, and there were no violations of the campaign finance laws by me, fake news." Kind of hanging over all of this is
that the payment to Cohen, or what's he talking
about? I
think that's Stormy Daniels, right?
That's instructing Cohen to make those payments. And there's a lot. The reason that the high school records are part in the news this week is because they're sort of sussing out what Cohen has said. He did reference the academic stuff, so now that's coming back into the news. And clearly, Cohen was the point man with those checks to Stormy Daniels and Mick.
Patty Vasquez has been conspicuously silent about all this.
I don't know the Playboy model's name either.
Karen McDougal.
Yes, thank you.
Hi, Patty Vasquez.
Her name was
Hi.
In the article.
Did we do a podcast since CPAC?
Since he hugged the flag?
Yeah, another thing.
That was just last weekend.
Went on that,
no,
two,
that was Sunday, yeah.
two-hour-long speech.
I love Colbert's line that it's the only flag that voluntarily wanted to be burned.
Not bad. Not bad.
Isn't there a touching the flag thing? I'm just...
What was the rancor about that? What, was that it? That you're not supposed to hug the flag?
I don't think you're supposed to. I mean, it was one of those...
It's just never really been done.
Well, I'm sure somewhere in the hills of
I'm going to need more than that, Patty.
Right. I mean,
this is the president who's done everything that's never been done. But that felt weird.
Yes. If it touches the ground, you're supposed to burn it. If it's frayed or damaged, you're supposed to burn it.
How about spray on tan? Is that?
I mean,
I think that, yes.
Flag, it did have an ill feeling. The Republicans, though, I thought it was sort of a great representation. Nobody's done a better job of embracing the flag, wearing the pin, than the Republican Party. They've co-opted the American flag, and patriotism is part of their platform. But at CPAC, they literally chanted again, "Lock her up." Republicans are still standing with and by Donald Trump, and I'm kind of amazed at that this week, too.
Was that political, going after Hillary Clinton like that?
Yes, it was.
There
What's
we
your
go.
Point?
Yeah,
What's
my
your
point is that you just can't hold the Democrats to this high standard. This is what happens in Washington. They have to do this to each other, apparently. That, you know, you need to look into these allegations and see what happens. I feel like what the Democrats are doing right now and looking into all the stuff going on with the Trump enterprise is noble and necessary and historically important.
I wouldn't call it noble.
I wouldn't call it noble. They're trying to save the country from this guy.
One other thing on the other side
that
has happened today is that, and this, I don't understand this yet, we'll probably understand more later, but Lanny Davis, who has been a spokesman slash lawyer for Michael Cohen, came out with a statement saying that Cohen, quote, directed his attorney, end quote, to explore a potential presidential pardon last year with Trump's legal team. Now, on Capitol Hill last week, Cohen said that, and Davis said today that his client was open to the ongoing dangling of a possible pardon after the FBI raided his home in April. He said Cohen directed his attorney to explore a pardon. Of course, that contradicts Cohen's public testimony before the House Oversight Committee last week when he said under oath that he never asked for and would not accept a pardon from Trump.
He may try to thread the needle there and say that he never asked Trump or anybody, that he asked his lawyer to ask Trump, but he didn't ask for it directly.
I know
that slicing it too,
sure.
way too too fine, but that's probably what he will say.
But when you've got a convicted liar saying, believe me now, and his own... So there's got to be a reason why Davis is the guy coming out with this statement, you know.
To get ahead of unless the uncovering that or, lie.
It depends.
Or there's evidence that they were dangling a pardon, yeah, and right. they talked through it that way.
It depends on what the meaning of the word ask is.
Well, that's the problem with everything that's happening this week with Michael Cohen, is that it all feels true, doesn't it? But he's also a guy who's going to go to jail for lying to the very body that's asking him these questions. So you want to believe him for a lot of reasons, but you have to be very careful about that. It's sort of like when Ivanka Trump said, categorically, Donald Trump, the president, did not help me get a security clearance in any way. Cohen is saying exactly the opposite. Now, one of them is clearly lying to us. It's hard to believe anybody with the last name of Trump, but Cohen's has lied.
That Cohen is Gary Cohen, I think, the former economic advisor. And that didn't come from just Michael Cohen. I think that came from some New Yorker reporting.
I traced the source in my head back to Michael Cohen. Okay. Maybe
I'm
wrong.
So let's get these people all on the records, bring them in, have them raise their right hand and say what happened. And we'll find out who did this. And I mean, it's not against the law for Trump to give his daughter security. He can give anyone security.
You know, that's the thing, too. Frankly, I'm a little surprised that it's wrong for him to advocate for her. Why wouldn't he? I mean,
because you had the CIA, apparently, in Jared Kushner's case, saying, no, this guy, it's not safe. He doesn't deserve it.
Right.
We've got real problems, and they did it anyway. And then the president said, I had nothing to do with it. And then Ivanka said he had nothing to do with it. That's the problem. Legally, of course, he can do this. But it's the lying around it and the fact that the intelligence community said they shouldn't be given the clearance. Those are the issues.
And his approval rating is up at 46% now. So explain that.
No, go ahead. You explain that.
I think we're at the point where the lying doesn't hurt anymore.
No, I think we're at the point where that is the counterbalance to what's happening with these oversight committees.
Well, it's easier now. The House is a defined, the Democrats are more easily defined opposition now that they're in power. And they're an easy target. And when you have Ocasio-Cortez and all of those, you know, Bernie Sanders, that becomes, you know, that's right. Then you have easier targets.
Did she fall out of the sky for them or what?
Yeah.
I mean, is Ocasio-Cortez the best thing to happen to Donald Trump right now, or Mitch McConnell, or just Republicans in general? Boy, do they have a boogeyman now.
Well, I told you guys, this months ago, and you scoffed.
What did you say?
You were scoffing, is what you guys were doing.
I did not
When I
scoff.
Said the RNC was merging its offices
and
operations with the Trump campaign, I said, they're all in. And you guys were, oh, they're really not all in. Look at CPAC, and they are all in. This son of a gun can say
you did
anything.
Say that.
This will teach me to scoff at Scott.
Yeah, never.
Damn.
Well, they've also got Ihan Omar, who they can say is anti-Semitic, and she's a target as well. And she doesn't help herself when, you know, they're like, hey, slow your roll, and she comes back out again. And, I mean, it doesn't mean that you can't criticize Israel, but let's pace the conversation
right,
a little
bit. Right, and this will make me sound sexist. It's the same sort of trap, but it used to be freshman members of Congress knew their place, and they stayed... They were quiet. They didn't make noise like this. They waited a few years. And
you know, it's still too early to tell whether she's going to be a net drag on the Democratic Party or not, because she's energizing a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, I actually think she's handling this wonderfully.
And she's,
I really do.
We're talking about AOC.
AOC. Okay. She's really good on social media. And, obviously she has, I mean, some of the provisions of the Green New Deal that got thrown out there were awfully far to the left, and she's going to have to answer for that. But I think
they want to take our hamburgers.
She is excited, and I know, and get rid of airplanes.
Our children. Yeah.
So, but I still think it's too early to say whether the energy that she's bringing and the excitement that she's bringing is going to be a net drag. Now, you could say the same thing about Sarah Palin, right? But in 2008? People were saying, oh, Sarah Palin, she's this attractive woman who speaks the truth and so on. But she turned out to be a nitwit.
Yes, but I think she also uncovered a lot of what we're experiencing now are these folks who are like, oh, wait, finally our voice is being heard. I mean, I think that she actually fueled a lot of that.
Well, and so what happens is the most extreme views of the party are getting the most play, and that's going to hurt them in the center. I don't think Ocasio-Cortez is a nitwit at all. I don't think so either. Brilliant, but I'm just saying that she's not so political savvy right now.
And no, she's
and
not
what
that.
She's doing is hurting.
She does say some things that go too far. She's not been careful with the facts and so on, and that's given them a big opening to criticize her. I want to add this, and that is that, did anyone here read the article in the New Yorker this week, Jane Mayer's piece about Fox News, a really long piece.
I listened to people talk about it.
Okay, well, that's good enough. And that explains the symbiosis. And there's nothing completely shocking about this, but it explains the symbiosis and the growth of Fox News and the Trump and how closely tied they are and how this creates this angry, always energized base that's supporting Trump. And that explains his 46% support that he's got, which is that you've got people who are constantly worked up for him, and that he is not going to be vulnerable. Trump is not going to be vulnerable the way Nixon was vulnerable to a sort of shifting of the tide, because the Republican senators, I mean, look, Mitt Romney has yet to come out and say that he opposes the emergency declaration. Mitt Romney, who was going to come in, remember that op-ed he wrote the first day of office? I'm going to stand up for principle. Where is Mitt Romney?
Well, wasn't it in that Mayer article too? And this is going back to the grades, where at the moment when Trump was vocally criticizing Donna Brazile for giving Hillary Clinton guidelines on debate questions, Fox was giving him the debate questions.
Yes, no. Allegedly.
Right? I mean,
what?
So
yeah. Shocked.
There's 538 members of Congress, and there's this one person who's been in office for 2 months, Ocasio-Cortez. Wow, are we over-empowering her? Yeah. If there were a thing, she'd get one vote. And I don't know that everybody's taking the flag with her anyway. So I think this is an interesting conversation, but I think it's almost irrelevant,
but
right?
But the point is, what we were talking about earlier, the Republicans now can define the Democrats through her, and that's going
to
hurt the Democrats.
The ones who want to give money to people who don't prefer to work. Is that
right?
What
well, and boy, have they've done this big segue, too.
Sam Zell, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but yeah. I just sometimes just can't. Sam Zell yesterday on CNBC responding to that said, you know, Americans don't want handouts. They want to earn what they give. You know, this is after corporate America was given the biggest.
I read that piece, Steve, and I thought, really, why is anybody asking Sam Zell what he thinks about anything? How is he an interesting or informed part of the conversation, right? He's a billionaire who couldn't run a media company who... Shut up, Sam Zell. Can I say that?
Amen.
Yeah. I can say it now, too.
Now that he doesn't own any of us.
We can say it currently. Anyway.
The coolest person. No, yeah, no kidding. That'll be our next overlords, and we will bow to them. The coolest person in any room is now officially CBS's Gail King, who sat calmly while R. Kelly exploded in an interview, insisting he's the victim of social media and greedy, lying women.
You can start a rumor on a guy like me or a celebrity. Just like that. All you have to do is push a button on your phone and say, so-and-so did this to me.
Well, not everyone on Fox News could tell the difference between that interview and ABC's Roberts interview with Jussie Smollett.
I agree. Hats off to Gayle King for totally redeeming herself after the Smollett fiasco. Oh.
Janet,
that was not Gayle King.
Oh, I knew that.
Robin Roberts did the Smollett
Robert
interview.
Roberts.
Yeah.
Jedediah, one of the things that I think lots of people
Robin Roberts out there.
Go right ahead, Jesse. It's
I
cool.
I apologize.
It's cool.
That was something. The world has been paying a lot of attention to this case. Why, Patty?
It's been going on for over 26 years, and the reporters who initially were trying to call attention to ring the alarm bells to this are still coming out. Like Abdon Palish and Jim DeRogatis are like, look, we've been talking about this. My issue right now with airing all this audio is, you know, we've been airing it, and it's painful for survivors of sexual assault. This is it's very strange and horrific, and I think that, you know, he's crazy, but the whole story has been insane, and you know, we need to hear more. We need to wait a little bit before we start airing and listening to. I don't think Gayle King is the coolest person in the room. I think
why?
I mean, right, because she stayed calm and collected, and they
what
already have
you,
memes.
What was your objection with the interview?
Listening to it. I mean, listening to somebody who did. I firmly believe assaulted these women.
You don't think there's any value
hear
in hearing his side of the story?
I think a lot of us don't want to hear from him. I'd rather.
So you're not interested in him telling his side of the story?
I'm not interested in hearing. I mean, you know,
technically he is innocent until proven guilty, right?
Certainly. But that wildness. But we also have, you know, we are also taking our time with, you know, we've taken 26 years now. Right. We've heard from him a lot. And he's been in court and he said, you know, I beat this rather than I beat this is not the same as I'm not guilty.
Well, when he came out during this interview and said, why did these people sell me their daughters? I mean, you just have to go, wait, what? What did he? What?
Right.
He, what?
I mean,
you know. And then
I just don't think what we heard from him was a defense for him. I think it was an insight into him.
Well, he was trying to defend himself, right, Steve?
I suppose he was.
So watching someone having a meltdown on national television because they can't stand the pressure of the allegations against them, I guess, is what we're watching and listening
Let
to.
Let me ask you this, Patty. Do you think he helped his case?
I can't imagine that he did.
He, you know, got so angry. He said, is this camera on me? And then he looks into that camera and he delivers that impassioned speech as if it were to a jury almost.
Is this camera on me?
Yes, it's on.
That's stupid. Use your common sense.
So we're going for the insane.
I can't answer that, Patty. I'm asking you if you thought that was helpful.
Rod Blagojevich tried a version of this. Remember before his trial, he was not quite as worked up as R. Kelly, but he did. He made this media rounds where he was like, I didn't do anything wrong, and he went on Celebrity Apprentice, and none of it worked.
Where was he when he was on Celebrity Apprentice? In his in and out of jail, in and out of the governor's office. When he was on Celebrity Apprentice, where was he?
Had he been acquitted the first time or not? There was a hung jury the first time.
He obviously wasn't in jail.
Patty went on, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here.
She was like on the Amazon
the reason she had to go and not him was because it was, I think it was in Costa Rica or something. And so it was out of the country and he couldn't get. So he had been charged for sure. And I don't know whether for the first or second trial.
I have to break in. We have breaking news here. A Democrat's not running for president.
What?
Politico, as we're talking, just reported that Sherrod Brown is not going to run.
Really?
That makes two who have announced they're not running this week. Oh. The other Hillary Clinton.
Hillary said. Well, and Bloomberg, who's not exactly a Democrat, he said he wasn't going to run either.
Are we all glad that Hillary's not running?
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Scott, yeah, I was with you.
I know how to draw her. So I'm a little disappointed. It's going to make my life a little harder. But you know what? This is where I was wrong. I was crowing about being right earlier. I was wrong about I was convinced she was running because she did everything a candidate who says.
Do you think she could win, Scott? If it was her and Donald Trump,
I want to go into the tall weeds of American history. Is that when the person loses in the Electoral College, but wins big in the
popular vote?
Thank you, popular vote. They come back 4 years later and they win.
That's happened before.
Oh yeah,
yeah. But this is too crazy.
Al Gore
should have come back.
Wait a minute, Al Gore was not the president of the United States.
But Gore won in the popular vote. Had he
in
run
2000,
again?
But what's happened
in 2004?
He didn't run in 2004.
And where it has happened is Andrew Jackson against Quincy Adams. He came back 4 years later and won.
That's a trend.
But it has happened. I'm trying to think of the other one where. There's two or three other examples.
Isn't this the point, though? Would enough people in Wisconsin and Michigan who voted against Hillary be so disappointed with Donald Trump that they would vote for Hillary this time? They'd hold their nose and vote that way, the way they did the other way last time? I mean, that's the rhetorical question.
Don't you think that voters are looking for somebody a little bit newer than Hillary or Biden or Sanders?
Bernie? Come on. That rally here on Navy Pier over the weekend was packed.
No, it ain't Bernie. It is you. It must be you.
Those candidates, I don't think, are going to excite voters the way that they need to. And so, I think Sanders is too old to be president.
That's why the mayor of South Bend, a city of 100,000 people, is destined to victory.
He was on Colbert the other night.
Oh, he's very good. Yeah. But, he's running Buttigieg.
Mayor Pete, Buttigieg.
I'm sorry. That was
37 years old.
I didn't know it was spelled that way.
He's only a few years older than the age of requirement to be commander-in-chief. He's a former Rhodes Scholar and a veteran of the war in Afghanistan. Would be the first openly gay nominee from a major party.
Gay with a husband. He's married. It's more than just gay. He's married.
Yeah.
Which I think is another
layer of baggage for people to manage.
I would say step for us.
I was actually Iowa, perhaps.
On my podcast, on the Prickly Seed podcast, I had a guest on this week who he likes very much.
Well, he's the guy. I said he's the mayor of 100,000 people. That's the problem. But otherwise, he's hugely impressive. I mean, if you listen to him talk, and some of the ideas he has, he articulates
his
ideas.
He's very likable that way. So, too, did you know who surprised me when she did that one-on-one on CNN was Kamala Harris. Okay. I just saw her as a blowhard. And I'm reading her book, and I'm such a sucker for a memoir or a biography. But would I prefer she not be in the hunt, too? I would prefer that.
Who do you want? You like Amy Klobuchar, right?
Well, sure I do. Yeah, I do.
Because from Minnesota.
Just because you're a masochist and you want to work for her.
Yes.
Yeah, she'll get over that.
Hickenlooper. Is someone to look at. Silly name.
Yeah, I can't have a president named Hickenlooper.
You guys are really discouraging today. You're laughing at people's last names.
Sorry about that. Yeah, my apologies.
Well, we did have a Barack Obama, whatever that is, but Hickenlooper just sounds so. Kamala Harris, Gillibrand, Castro. I'm just looking at the list.
We don't have that much time, John.
I know. Okay.
Are we going to talk about Aaron Schock at all?
Oh, yeah. How do I say?
I don't know what to say. What happened? I mean, and here, two things. I don't understand. I think we don't know yet, right, what happened?
We don't really know what happened. No, the case fell apart. It was in central Illinois. It came up here, and I guess the U.S. Attorney's Office up here took a second look at the case and decided that it wasn't prosecutable.
Apart. They're still he's pleading guilty.
It fell apart as a series of felony charges.
He's going to have a clean record. He's just going to have to make restitution.
Pay $67,000 or something, and he could run for Congress
Jesse
again.
Jesse Jackson Jr. is going, what?
Hey, wait a minute. Well, I didn't have to be in jail?
Not just Jesse Jackson, but what about Michael Cohen and Donald Trump if they're in trouble for campaign finance violations in writing these checks? I mean, is there any similarity to that and what happened to Aaron Schock?
I don't think that those guys should go to jail for campaign. I don't think anyone should go to jail for campaign finance violations. This goes beyond that. This was an abuse of his office. And he's admitted to this much, right? If you guys read the proffer, the agreement, whatever it was, where he says, yeah, I used to use my office to buy face value tickets to major sporting events, and I sold them at a profit. And he made a ton of money doing that.
Yeah.
And then he doubled the actual mileage that he was supposed to be driving for reimbursement.
Yeah.
This guy was like a common little grifter.
So two years later,
theft of government funds, making false statements, filing a false tax return. These are the charges against him.
And he's going to walk.
And he's going to totally
without
walk.
A trial.
And I don't know. There must be something in the way that investigation proceeded that they don't want to come out, that at a trial would embarrass the government, because it just doesn't make any sense to me. The evidence that was laid out even in that agreement was prosecutable. Yeah. And so I don't get it. And I don't know if Aaron Schock has the chutzpah to run for office again.
Oh, he
but
does.
If you remember what a bright light he was at one point. I mean, he was like a school board when he was 19
years
like
old.
That.
Then he was in the state legislature, I think 27, elected to Congress.
Bradley University grad and ripped. Right?
Well, I mean, on the cover of Men's Health magazine?
He was
I
on.
Know.
He
was
Scott refuses to post for the cover of Men's Health.
He was
stand off of him.
Nobody
he was on MSNBC this morning saying, you know, that he was targeted. He said, in part because he was on the cover of Men's Health and because he was posting vacation pictures of himself on Instagram at a time when politicians weren't doing those things. He said, they all do it now. I wasn't. I was out there. I was out front. And that's why they went after me.
You know, being on the cover of Men's Health gets you a lot of attention, right? Being one of the first members of Congress 10 years ago that was on Instagram.
They went after him right after they had that tour of his office where he had redone his Washington office to make it look like the set of Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
And there was something very strange about the guy, but there was also something kind of compelling about it. And I think that he could have run for Senate. He could have run for governor of Illinois. And, you know, the whole counterfactual history of Aaron Schock is fascinating.
Tony Preckwinkle and Lori Lightfoot are our candidates for mayor now in Chicago next month. First of next month, we'll get a chance to pick one. It appears to me as though Lori Lightfoot's in the lead on this one. Patty's shaking her head.
No, I'm nodding my head. There's a difference.
Pardon me, yes. Nodding her head. She's agreeing with that.
It seems that she's got a lot of momentum. Everyone I talk to, they're all talking about Lori Lightfoot. And that's been that way since the week before the election.
Well, the very first commercial I thought, and this was instructive to me because, as you all know, I consume all my local politics via their campaign ads. And the very first thing I saw was one of those dark, sinister ads for somebody from Preckwinkle.
Lori Lightfoot.
Exactly.
Turns out the only thing Lori Lightfoot's trying to change is her own story.
I heard and saw that ad, and I thought, oh, she must be doing pretty well. The hue of these things is just so ominous. Literally, why is the Tribune in their profile pictures using those sort of dark room, dark shots where it almost looks like they've colored the faces of the candidates? We're down to two now.
Yeah, what was that?
And they're African-American anyway. But I mean, when we had a slate of, what was it, 14 of them?
Yeah.
The pictures, I thought, looked criminal.
It's artsy.
I thought it looked...
That's what they were going for.
They're still doing it, and I don't think it does either of them a favor.
I tried to justify thinking, well, they're coming out of the shadows. I don't know if
what
that's...
What are they saying?
Well, we did it with all 14 candidates, so it wasn't just those two.
It wasn't a racial thing or anything. I don't think it was that, but it reminded me
of what they did to O.J. Simpson on the cover of Time and Newsweek. One of them printed a picture of O.J. normally hued, and then the other one darkened him to make him look more sinister. And I know that wasn't the objective of the Tribune, but when they had 14 candidates and they put all of them before the election on the front page, they colored everything to look darker.
By the way, the India Post is using an astrological chart in order to determine who's going to win the mayoral election.
The
India Post
of Chicago's mayor's race.
Yes, of Chicago's.
And what are we seeing there, Patty?
Lori Lightfoot has a very strong Saturn and Mercury, giving her good communication skills.
It's over.
Yep. Although Tony Preckwinkle has Rahu and Ketu, the shadowy planets are exalted. So. There's a Scott Drew take from the India Post.
Cartoon, and it showed Lori Lightfoot standing on the poles. Is that what it was?
Mm-hmm.
And the upshot of that was?
She's saying to Tony Preckerwald, what height difference?
Yeah. She's a little, her head's a little bit higher than Tony's.
What are you thinking, Eric?
I'm thinking what you're thinking, which is that it feels like the momentum is in Lightfoot's direction, and the fact that Preckwinkle has gone on the attack so early makes me think that she is very interested to use that money that she has, the money advantage, to define her opponent. Another thing that I'm thinking is that I'm loving the fact that this is a six-week election cycle.
Really?
Yeah, I think this is enough time. We're going to be bombarded by these ads. They're debating Thursday night at NBC5. They're going to be debating, I think, four more times. We'll get plenty of opportunity to make a decision with these people without getting completely sick of this. Because, I mean, the presidential sweepstakes is already going, and we're going to be so sick of that by the time next November rolls around. I think 4 weeks is plenty of time to evaluate these two candidates.
You don't think it's too much? I thought 3 weeks would be just fine.
Well, isn't that what they do in England? They call an election, they have it, and they say, okay, well, let's get engaged and let's follow this.
And if it's a long one, it's four weeks long.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, Preckwinkle has a lot of money, a lot of organization behind her. Willie Wilson is coming out tomorrow.
Oh, that's right.
To offer
his
endorsement. And, you know, we're laughing about that, but Willie Wilson won 14 wards.
Yeah.
He won more wards than anybody else.
By several. So Willie Wilson, I don't know what's going to... I did ask his people whether he was going to run a write-in campaign, because I thought that
really?
He is that full of himself that he would do that, and they said no. So I retract the fact that he's
full of himself
to do that. But if he had, that would have been interesting. I don't know who he takes votes for.
If he endorses Preckwinkle, then to me it's kind of like, well, it's that's not going to move the bar that far. But if he endorses Lori Lightfoot, I think it changes things a lot because of his strength in those wards where she did not do well.
It's a kind of a tough spot for him because he seems to attract a lot of more conservative voters, and you know Lori Lightfoot is the progressive, but Preckwinkle is the taxer. So I don't know where you go.
I think he may. It's hard for me to imagine him endorsing either one of them full-throatedly. But I think it's important. I think that because Scott is exactly right. Lori Lightfoot did not do all that well in predominantly African American wards. I mean, I think she just finished third. I mean, she didn't do terribly, but she could really use that boost. And I don't think Preckwinkle.
I wonder if the choices are going to discourage the white vote. I wonder if a lot of people in my neighborhood are going to say, "Yeah, whatever, you all decide. I'm not in this game."
That was my sense. Lori Lightfoot did really well. She came in second in my neighborhood, so I was really surprised by that.
I think Lightfoot came in second. You did your napkin math on your column recently, which I loved.
Napkin math, yes, thank you.
What was that, Eric Jarn?
I ran a simulation of what rank choice voting would look like.
If you count
every ward as one voter.
I missed that.
And what would happen if you just said, okay, let's say first ward is one voter, and then I sort of watched how the returns would shape because you eliminate the bottom person and give their votes to the next person, to the person who is second in their ward. And it turns out the Lightfoot won. Daly came in second, however, which suggested to me, you know, that perhaps that the second choice of a lot of people in was Daly and not Preckwinkle.
So. I believe that. They're looking at me like we have just enough time for our recommendations. And actually, I wanted to also just see if you guys had anything to say about legalized sports betting in Illinois and legalized marijuana. Those two trends are coming pretty quick right now.
I think I hate it because they just see it as free money and there's no talk about reining in the spending down in Springfield. So, you know, and if you ask them, they'll say, we're cut to the bone down here, which of course is complete and utter horse crap.
I looked this up. They said if we had legalized marijuana in Illinois, recreational, we'd get $500 million a year in taxes. If we had legalized sports betting, we would get $30 to $70 million. This idea that sports betting is really going to be a shot in the arm is not. Well, that's just not much money.
And some of the betting in different locations has actually backfired as far as making money for the state and really just making money for the folks that put those machines in.
Yeah, I mean that money is not free money. It's money that's not going to restaurants and movies and all kinds of other stuff.
Oh, other entertainment venues, you mean?
Yeah.
My recommendation this week is for the second week in a row, An American Summer. I read that. I recommended it as a recall last week. It's a new Alex Kotlowitz book. It's about a summer in Chicago on the south and west sides and a very intimate portrayal of the young men and women that are caught up in all of the violence. It is amazingly intimate. He is talking not from way over here about those people. He's in the hospital rooms with them. He's in the gang hangouts with them. He's at the street corners with them. And he's telling you what their lives are like and giving you a sense of why they do the things they do. It's called An American Summer. I can't put it down. I'll finish it today. How about you?
I'm going to defer till next week. I'm mired in a one-volume history of Byzantium. And it was written by the guy who wrote the definitive three-volume history of Byzantium. So it's very dense and I'm
next week, maybe you could also tell us what Byzantium is.
I will.
Which is a Byzantine topic.
Yes.
Eric Zorn.
I want to second my high regard for Alex Kotlowitz, who's a basketball friend of mine, actually, and a brilliant writer. And the review in the New York Times, which is all I've read so far, was very positive, although it did say at the end that it worried that it was going to reinforce Chicago's reputation as a sort of hellhole for violence. But I will read it and make my own judgment. My recommendation is a cereal that we've been buying. It's Grainberry cereal.
Oh, my God. We run the commercials for those
Do
here.
Do you? Multi-brand flakes with
Onyx. Grainberry.
Grainberry. Healthy cereal for your family.
Grainberry. I like the multi-brand flakes with Onyx sorghum. And I don't know what Onyx sorghum is. I looked it up. They apparently pioneered this at Texas A&M University, so it must be good. But it's really good. It's really good cereal.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Wow. You
know, we've been running this commercial campaign on this radio station. I know their jingle, and I'm thinking, I hope that stuff's as good as we're making it sound.
It is good. You should give it a try. I recommend it.
Do you put sugar on it?
Oh, no. I don't put sugar in any cereal.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Grainberry. Thank you, Eric Zorn. Thank you, Scott Stantis.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve Bertrand, who had to leave. He's going to take this studio in about 1 minute and do his radio show. Patty Vasquez had to exit stage left, too. Thank you, Elif Garris, our producer. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.